The following is presented as an entertainment program emphasizing folklore. It is not intended as legal or medical advice in any way and should not be used to replace the advice of a legal or medical professional. Hello and welcome to New World Witchery's Folk Magician's Notebook episode from May 2024. These are short monthly episodes that will offer a brief overview of folk magical topics and information that might be useful to you over the coming month. We highly recommend that you also pick up a reliable almanac for folk magic, such as Bennebel Wen's Metaphysician's Date Planner, The Witch's Almanac, Llewellyn's Witch's Date Book, or your local farmer's almanac. Let's take a look at the moon from May 2024. The new moon arrives on May the 7th in the sign of Taurus, which is also our solar astrological sign for the month. Our May full moon is on the 23rd in the sign of Sagittarius, and it's frequently known as the flower moon. Some notable astrological dates. We start off the month waning from Aquarius into Pisces and then into Aries. This may feel like a little bit of a topsy-turvy time, moving from the feet to the head as the moon goes from Pisces to Aries in a waning phase especially. So expect a bit of disorientation, and remember that the turbulence is temporary. On the 7th, the new moon is in Taurus, setting the stage for growth from the Earth sign and giving some stability again. Nourish your garden and do some work with your hands and body to help you reconnect to the physical and ground yourself. The moon waxes through Gemini beginning on the 9th and Cancer starting on the 11th, which means it could be a good time to communicate with family and friends, schedule time to see them, and share some stories about yourself with others. Leo has the floor on the 13th through the 15th, and it will be a time to make the flowers in your garden stronger. Prune judiciously and deadhead as needed, but also bring some of your flowers indoors if you can to enjoy them, or maybe save them for divination and craft projects, which we'll get to later. On the 16th, we get into Virgo, and it's a time to allow yourself to indulge a bit, whether that's a little more time reading, or making sure you get some time to do some exercise or socialize, or even just baking a cake that's especially for you. It's a good time for that. When the moon shifts into Libra on the 18th, you'll have 3 days to rebalance yourself, and likely have some people to share that cake with if there's any left. Listen to the advice of those around you during this time, as they may have insights you've not been considering. On the 21st, we are in Scorpio and the moon nears full, so spend some time with your shadowy side. Or do some nighttime gardening, take a night stroll, moonbathe, stargaze, or enjoy the dark hours however you like. When the moon hits full on the 23rd in Sagittarius, it will be a crackling, lively energy, and it would be a perfect time for a moon-gazing party, or even hosting a little tea and divination time or a witchy crafting night. We see the moon waning through Capricorn on the 25th through the 27th, so make some time to clean up and get yourself back to center during those days, in the garden, in the home, and or in your mind. And as the month closes, we'll be sliding through Aquarius again and ending the month on Pisces with a waning quarter moon, a good time to do a bit of journaling and contemplating and introspection. Now we'll take a look at cards, divination, and proverbs for the month. Each month, Lane and I will pull a card for one another, one playing card and one tarot or oracle card. We'll indicate the meanings of those cards in general, then read them for the other person specifically as a way to get a sense of how they are read in actual practice.
This time around, I asked my playing card deck for a general forecast of what Corey could expect in the month of May. I was so happy to see that I pulled the Three of Hearts. According to Corey's own cardomancy book, 54 Devils, this card symbolizes a full cup or a wish granted. Some see this as a card that, perhaps a bit literally, represents a love triangle, or two divergent paths that one must soon make a choice of one or the other. So, let's hope it's the first meaning and that Corey's going to have a wish fulfilled this month.
In tarot this month, I pulled the moon. In a standard Rider-Waite-Smith deck, the moon depicts the lunar sphere rising in the darkness over a body of water. A dog or pair of dogs howl at it, while a langoustine or crayfish comes up from the water beneath them. I used the 5-cent tarot from Madame Clara, which also depicts a pair of canines, in this case coyotes, and a crayfish. This is a card of the subconscious, the unspoken but deeply felt parts of ourselves that we often keep hidden from the day side of our lives. This can be intuition and wonder and dreaming, but it can also be illusion and fear and doubt, especially when it's ignored or suppressed for too long. For Lane this month, I believe this card is asking her to spend some time in her shadows and acknowledge those deeply felt things that can be hard to admit or ask for in the broad light of day. It's a time to face fears, not with aggression or combativeness, but with gentleness and care. Let this be a month of sinking deep and then rising back up, of underworld journeying and dream journaling, of howling at the moon when the need arises. Our folk divination method of the month, floral divination. You probably already know that there is a language of flowers that was frequently used to encode messages during Victorian and other eras. We spoke about that a bit in our flower magic episode not too long ago, but why not add in a bit of divination to the bouquet? There are a few ways you could go about this. You could ask someone you're divining for to go and pick some flowers or make a bouquet for you at a flower shop and see what they bring you, interpreting the flowers themselves as well as color, number, and condition in the flowers. Alternatively, you might acquire a bouquet, fresh or dried, or even a potpourri of various flowers mixed together, then gather a handful and sprinkle them over a reading cloth or a diagram. A simple compass would be good to read for elemental associations, noting that flowers landing in the south might have to do with passionate relationships or anger, while those in the west could be involved with emotions and dreams. Ideally, you'd want to pick up a book that identifies a number of flowers you can use in your divinations, such as The Magic Garden by A. Mercantante, The Victorians and Their Flowers by Nicolette Scaurus, or The Language of Flowers by Sheila Pickles. But here's a handful, or vaseful, of some common flowers and their meanings to get you started. Foxglove, ambition and cunning. Birch buds or branches, grace and motherhood. Nightshades, secrets. Roses, generally beauty and love, but yellow might indicate jealousy, white purity and chasteness, and so forth based on the colors. Zinnias, friendship. Poplar buds, time and patience. Poppies, sleep and dreams. Irises, hope. Rosemary, memories and the past. Daisies, innocence and first love. Carnations, admiration and dignity. Marigolds, sorrow and loss. Primrose, fidelity and loyalty. Lavender, answers and manhood. Jasmine, kindness and friendship. Basil, cruelty and hatred. Buttercups, riches. Lilies, mourning, if peace lilies. Purity or joy for other kinds. Ivy, friendship and devotion. Dandelions, wisdom and depth. And of course, you could always try the age-old flower divination of petal pulling, too. Think he loves me, he loves me not, for example, but instead of love, you could ask about anything and alternate between yes and no answers. Here's hoping that someone brings you a bundle of jasmine, nightshade, and irises for friendship, secrets, and hope.
Nature has but a few simple materials, and yet with this poverty, does she trick out all the world in scenes of delicious beauty? A quote from Victorian gardening author Shirley Hibbard.
No! Our folktale of the month is The Weardale Fairies, adapted from English Fairy Tales and Legends by Rosalind Kirvin. There was a wayward young girl who lived in Stanhope up in Weardale, and one day she took it into her head to go off by herself gathering primroses outside of the village along the riverbank. It was a foolish thing to do, for the hills above the river were full of hollows and caves, and everyone thereabouts knew that these were riddled with hostelries and dancing halls of the fairies. Even in broad daylight, it wasn't long before the child heard eerie music playing on pipe, fiddle, and drum. The tune was so wild and hauntingly exquisite that she found it quite impossible to ignore. It spun into her head and giddied her around, until she was compelled to hurl down the bunch of flowers she was clutching and hurry toward it. Madly, she stumbled through the bracken stumps and brown heather and soon came to a gigantic boulder jutting from the hillside. Running down its center was a gaping fissure. By now, the music was almost deafening. No longer could she hear the wind and the curlews crying. It was so frenzied that the girl couldn't keep her feet from tapping. Her fingers twitched and her head began to nod uncontrollably. Young as she was, she knew she must tear herself away for fear of being lost to this world forever, yet the pull of the music was too strong for her. "Don't look! Come away!" she cried to herself. But in spite of her fears, she pressed her face to the crack and peered through it. Beyond, in a thick darkness lit by a mass of flickering, smoking candles, she glimpsed a sight that few have ever seen. More than 80 minuscule people, perfectly formed and richly dressed, yet each no bigger than a hand width, dancing around the cavern like a swarm of angry bees. If the crack had been wider, or the girl smaller, she would have squeezed through it for sure, but luckily that was impossible. Somehow she managed to wrench herself away. Scattering her flowers, she ran back down the valley and along the riverbank until she reached her home. "Whatever's wrong?" her mother asked when the girl came lurching indoors, for her hair was all disheveled and her face white as a sheet. "I've seen them," she whispered, "the little people." Weeping and trembling, she told all that had happened. "You're safe from them now," the mother tried to comfort her. But when the father came in from the fields, all her terror came seething back, for he didn't agree.
"They didn't see you spying on them?" he quizzed the girl.
She confessed that she didn't know.
"Then we must assume that they did," he said gravely. "And that means, oh my precious daughter, we've as good as lost you."
"But how can that be?" she cried.
"They'll come for you," her father answered. "Haven't we told you enough times, you foolish child? The little people can't bear to be spied on. They'll snatch you away as soon as they can."
"For pity's sake, ask the wise woman if she can help us," the mother urged him.
The father nodded gravely and hurried out through the twilight to the lonely cottage at the far end of the village, covered in twisting briars and tendrils of ivy. He knocked at the door and was beckoned inside by a very old woman. He told her all that had happened. The old woman stared into the flames of her fire, then she turned to him and said, "They'll come for her tonight, I reckon, at midnight."
"But surely there must be some way to save her," he exclaimed.
"Oh, indeed there is," she said, "and it's simple enough, yet harder than you might think. For the fairies won't be able to touch you so long as your house is totally silent. However, should they hear even the slightest whisper, they'll snatch her away."
The father was somewhat comforted. He rushed home and sent the girl to bed at once, strictly forbidding her to call or cry out or make any kind of noise. Then the parents went around the house together. They extinguished the fire to be sure there would be no crackling or shifting, jammed all the clocks so they could not tick, and overfed the dogs and cats until they all fell into a deep, satiated sleep. Finally, they bolted the doors tightly and sat down in the cold kitchen to wait. After a while, though the clocks were all still, they guessed it must be midnight, for they heard the sound of high-pitched, reedy voices, the clinking of bridle bells, and the soft clip-clopping of shrunken hooves. A whole troop of fairies came riding into the yard, but the door was shut firmly against them. The mother and father sat still and quiet as corpses, scarcely daring to breathe. But, however much care one takes, something always slips through. When the girl had gone upstairs to hide in her bed, the youngest dog, hardly more than a pup, had sneaked up with her, missing out on the feast that had sent all the others into a slumber. Now he lay at the foot of her bed with one ear cocked. When the fairies opened the gate, he began to growl, and as they pranced across the yard, this turned into a frenetic barking. The parents looked at each other in horror and went running up the narrow stairs to the room where they left their beloved daughter, but it was too late, for the protective spell had been broken and the bed was empty. The child was gone. The mother wept bitterly all night, but the father went straight back to consult the wise woman. She shook her head when she heard what had happened, but passed no judgment. Instead, she said, "It is still not too late to save your daughter, if you dare to visit the fairy's cave yourself."
"Of course," the father cried. "Anything!"
"When you go, you must take them 3 gifts, the wise woman went on. "Firstly, something that gives light without burning. Secondly, a piece of an animal's body which you have taken without shedding even a drop of blood. Thirdly, a chicken that has no bone in its body."
But what does that mean? The father cried. My heart is broken. How do you expect me to solve these riddles?
Look, and you will see, the old woman answered. Listen, and you will hear. And wherever you go from now on, carry a rowan sprig with you, for it has the power to protect you from malicious enchantments.
Then she showed the father the door and shut it firmly behind him. A spreading rowan tree stood by the wise woman's garden gate. The father broke a twig from it and put it in his pocket. Then he set off morosely along the road to his home. His thoughts were all befuddled, and he wasn't looking where he was going, so he didn't see the ragged tramp in his path until they collided. The father offered his apologies, and to make amends, pulled a silver sixpence from his pocket and pressed it into the tramp's grubby hand. The tramp stared at him with sunken eyes, then beckoned him closer.
My fault, too, he said. If I take this money, I owe you a favor in return. Is there something I can do for you?
The father shook his head sadly. I don't suppose you could solve a riddle for me, he said. Can you tell me what gives light without burning?
The tramp laughed.
Well, that's easy for a man on the road like me. The answer's a glowworm. I often use one to light my way. Here.
He reached into the hedgerow, scooped up a small beetle that shimmered with luminescence so soft it could scarcely be seen, and pressed it into the father's hand.
Whatever you need it for, I hope it works, he said. May good luck be with you.
They went their separate ways. As the spring sunshine bore down, the father noticed a movement in the grass. A bronze-colored lizard was struggling to free itself from a twist of wire. He crouched down to free it. As the lizard scurried away, its tail came off in his hand, leaving neither wound nor blood. Ah, he thought, putting the tail in his pocket. That's the second riddle. He continued on his way. In a copse by the roadside, he heard a great squawking. Parting the branches, he saw a thrush besieged by a kestrel. Quickly, he found a pebble and hurled it at the larger bird. As the kestrel flew up and away, the thrush broke into a sweet song, and in the purity of its notes, he seemed to hear strange words. 3 days by 5 days. On an egg sits a hen, chick within. No bones by then. He hurried home and told his wife all that he'd seen and heard. Luckily, one of their hens was already brooding, and so they set her to sit upon a new-laid egg straight away. When 15 days had passed, the father took the egg from her nest and added it to the glowworm and the lizard's tail that were already in his pocket, and then he set off to the fairy's cave. He trod the path his poor lost daughter had followed along the riverbank. Like her, he caught the strains of eerie music and was drawn to the boulder on the hillside, where a crack marked the entrance to the fairy realms. His anguish was enough to banish his fear. Holding the rowan twig firmly in his hand, he roared above the deafening music, "Give me back my daughter!" At once the music stopped. In the heavy silence that followed, he put his eye to the fissure and saw the girl. She was dressed in a nightgown, as when he'd last seen her. She was pale as bones now, and held firmly in the grasp of a dozen minuscule hands. A reedy voice called out, "What will you give us to get her back, mortal?"
"I bring you a light that does not burn. Part of a creature's body taken without shedding blood, and a boneless chicken," the father answered. He crammed the curious gifts through the crack, pushing hard until he heard each one drop onto the floor of the cave. There was a burst of crackling laughter, and a flash of light, and then the crazy music started up again. In despair, he turned away, thinking that after all, he would never get his daughter back. But then, there she was, standing right behind him, safe, alive, and free.
Isn't it always the way? You're out picking flowers, and then, suddenly, there's the unmistakable tinkle of music drifting from another world calling you to come see. Or the hustle of a goblin market calling you to come by. Or perhaps a sudden fissure in the earth out of which your underworld ruling uncle rides to abduct you. So many stories about what happens when we stop to smell the roses, right? But they're just stories, aren't they? There's a cave in Weardale known as the Fairy Cave. Local beliefs have long held that the cave belongs to the fairies, and trespassing into those spaces is an invitation to trouble. It's important to remember that while the stories we tell about fairies, magic, other worlds, and more are stories to entertain us at one level, they are also often treasures of folk belief buried in the pages and ink that we unearth years later.
These stories may or may not have been believed as literally true, but they certainly belied a core set of beliefs about the way people in Weardale and the surrounding areas thought people should behave when in wild places or dealing with unknown spirits and fairies. The silent vigil in this story speaks to a belief about avoiding the fairies' company and their ire and how that could be managed. The Rowan Sprig, given by the wise woman, is a protective charm, and Rowanwood cross charms are still used as protection today. The three riddles comprise a strange magic spell of natural wonders assembled and delivered to the fairies, as rare treasures more wonderful than gold, even though they all derive from the everyday natural world of our farmer. Sometimes we stop and pick the flowers and find ourselves in trouble, but it's worth remembering that there are other flowers we can pick to get ourselves out of that trouble. There's no belief based on the doctrine of signatures that any ailment acquired in nature can be undone by something growing within 30 feet of the problem. Snakebite cured with snake root, for example, or poison ivy treated with jewelweed. Similarly, we can stop by the gardens and forests of folklore, these books of fairy tales, and see what's there to be picked too. Sometimes the oldest and best magics are hiding in nursery rhymes and stories after all. Still, carry that Rowan twig with you the next time you go out foraging, just in case. We'll finish up our notebook entry with a little charm or craft each month to add a practical element to your work. This time, homemade rosary beads. Rosary beads are called that for a reason. They used to be made from roses. In fact, there are still many religious orders who will do a service for grieving families and turn funeral flowers into rosary beads and rosaries for bereft family members. Beads like these are not just for Catholic services, however. Many religious groups that engage in repeated prayer, such as Buddhists, will have a beaded cord to work through their prayer cycle. If you would like to make a small chain of prayer beads, it's actually fairly easy to do, if a bit time-consuming. Roses often make the best flowers to use because of their oil, fiber, and water content, but many other flower petals can be used as well. To do this, you will need several cups of flower petals, just the petals, and not any of the other plant parts or materials. 4 full cups of petals will yield enough material for around 40 to 60 beads. You'll also want to have a hat pin or a quilting needle plus some straight pins and some cardboard, which you'll use to keep your beads in place while drying. You may also want to have some rose oil or other natural flower essence, some sandalwood powder or other organic bark powder like cinnamon, although technically you could use flour in a pinch, and some sturdy thread for putting things together. If you intend to add in additional charms or a clasp, have those handy too. Take your flower petals and clean them thoroughly, then put them into a large stock pot and cover with just enough water to submerge them. Bring them to a simmer, then move the petals to a food processor, but keep the simmering liquid. Pulse the petals until they are almost a fine paste, then scrape the processor bowl and add everything back to the stock pot. If you want to add in any essential fragrance oils, do so now. Bring everything back to a simmer and let it simmer for at least an hour until some of the water has evaporated and the petal mass is starting to look a little bit like clay. If it gets too dry, you can add a little bit more water to make it a little bit more squishy. If it's too liquidy, you can drain it or add in a bit of the powdered barks, but bear in mind those will change the scent of the beads a bit. Once the simmering is done, let it cool and run it through the food processor again if any big pieces remain. Squeeze the petal dough using towels or cheesecloth to drain off as much excess liquid as you can, and don't be afraid to keep that water for magical baths. Roll the dough out a bit, or knead it with your hands, and then begin pinching off bits of it and rolling it up into balls. The beads will shrink to about half their wet size when they dry, so don't be worried if they seem a little big at first. When you finish one, use the hat pin or needle to punch a hole through the center of the bead. Then take the straight pin and affix the bead to the cardboard. Repeat until you have all the beads that you want, then put the cardboard someplace with air and sunlight to begin drying. I do not recommend using a dehydrator or oven for this, as it can make them a little bit too fragile. Let them dry for several days. You could even build a ritual of praying over them daily to get them acclimated to their new role. And after 4 to 7 days, they should be dry and firm enough to string. Use a thinner needle to run through a bead, tying a knot to secure each one as you go. Bigger knots will hold them in place pretty well. String them in groups of significant numbers, such as 3s, 7, 9, or whatever speaks to you. and when you're done, you can either affix a charm to the end, add a clasp to make it wearable, or even tie the two ends together to make a loop. Find prayers that speak to you and feel meditative, and use the rosary as a way to offer devotional work for spirits, ancestors, or deities, as well as a way to enter a trance-like space for spiritual communion. Happy beading! That's it for this entry into your New World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook. Thank you so much for joining us this month. We hope that you are finding lots of joy in the budding spring season as we're moving between spring and summer, that you've had a wonderful Beltane if you were celebrating that, or May Day, or Walpurgisnacht, or whatever you're celebrating at this particular time of year. If you'd like to help support this show and keep it on the air, make other great shows possible, you can do that by visiting us at patreon.com/newworldwitchery, where you can donate $1 a month, whatever you can afford, and get some fun little perks as part of supporting us. If you have thoughts or ideas on this show or any others, you can always write to us at compassandkey@gmail.com or newworldwitcherypodcast@gmail.com. Both of those will reach us. You can find this episode and hundreds of others at our website, along with hundreds of articles on North American folk magic, newworldwitchery.com. And if you're looking for us on social media, you can find us using our Find Us page, which is newworldwitchery.com/find-us. That will basically do it for us this time around. And again, we hope that you're having a marvelous May, and we look forward to talking to you again in the near future. But until then, thanks for listening. Be well.